Welcome to episode 27 of the James Murua Literary Podcast. I'm your host, James Murua. Today's guest is Khadija Abdallah Bajaber, who won the Grey Wolf Africa Prize in 2018 and went on to publish House of Rust, a beloved novel. In this episode, we chat to the Mombasa-born and bred writer about winning the Grey Wolf Prize and how it changed her life, her writing influences, and loads more. This podcast has been supported by the Goethe Institute in Kenya as part of the Kenya Writes series. Enjoy. Thank you for agreeing to be part of this podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start at the end. You had a launch for your book here at the Alliance Française where I'm recording. How was the event for you?
It was so much better than I expected. I was very nervous the whole of the day. And expected to completely choke on stage. Alhamdulillah, I had a really lovely conversation partner in Hawa Noor, who was wonderful. And a lot of people showed up. It's not usual for literary events or to have a big turnout, but I was really happy to see a lot of people there. I thought I would hate it if people came, but I was really glad in the end. It was really nice to see people from my hometown like turn up and show up and support. That really touched me.
People know you for House of Rust, you know? You won the Grey Wolf Africa Prize in 2018. You were the first winner. Did you even have an idea that it would go so far?
No, I had no idea. In fact, I submitted not because I wanted to exactly compete in the competition. I submitted because it was a kind of physical deadline online through Submittable. I would be able to prove to myself that I actually finished a project. So the goal of me submitting was not actually to seriously enter the competition, because I never expected anyone to actually even consider my work that deeply. But I was really struggling with completing a big project. And I said, okay, there's a deadline. There's a deadline and I have to meet that deadline. If I don't meet that deadline and I log into Submittable, I'll see deadline has passed and I'll feel really crummy about it. So I have to prepare. I have to enter. I have to finish. So I did that. And I didn't even think about it again because I've never really won anything. So that doesn't mean I have low self-esteem, but that I have realistic expectations. So then I got the email. I was kind of shocked. It was like in the middle of the night, maybe 2, 3 a.m. I was not supposed to be awake at that time. I got the email. I've said it before. It feels like almost like a vibration in the head. I felt like I'd been one of those iron rods that are stuck in the ground and you just hit them real hard with a hammer. So I changed my life, but I wasn't able to process it properly, and I'm still processing it paka sasa, or until now. But it took a long while for me to process that. But I've been writing before that. I'd been writing a lot of poetry. I've been submitting to a lot of Kenyan places. I'd occasionally submit to an international publication, an international competition, knowing full well that I wasn't going to get anything out of it. I treated these submissions and these deadlines as a way to kind of improve myself and improve my craft, because I needed the practice. So I've been mostly being published in African publications. They've been really wonderful. Like either I submit and they see my name and they like my work, or some of them have reached out to me through other writers and be like, hey, do you have something to submit? Would you like to submit? And those opportunities actually led to sometimes the creation of new work or improving already work that I had kind of banished to the to be continued or to never be continued folder.
I noticed that a lot of your work that is available online is after you'd won the Grey Wolf Prize. Is there something about that? Because is it like you hadn't published before, like prominently, or after you won the prize, people are looking for you more?
The places I'd been published before Grey Wolf, or before the Grey Wolf Prize, was Brainstorm Kenya. I had some poetry there, and I think I had an article there. And I was lucky about that article because the article was part of a university assignment. I was in James Oranga's class, and he said, for your grade this year, you have to submit your article someplace and it has to get published. I couldn't get my article in The Nation. I wrote many articles. I couldn't get it in Standard. I couldn't get it anywhere until like I got Brainstorm. I don't know if I approached them or how it happened, because I found out like the creators of Brainstorm were kind of the same Google poetry group. when I got the Grey Wolf Prize, it was a lot more prominence. I think people now at least know my name, or at least like among writers. So people had known me primarily as a poet, if they knew of me. And there was that Kwani was going to put out a poetry anthology. So we actually got contracted, like we submitted our work, we got the contract and everything, but it didn't go forward, like we weren't contacted again. But yeah, I was definitely moving around like as a poet, keeping to myself, but like my work was kind of out there. And I think before that, Enquirer Review, and that was a big push for me. I hadn't really published in like a new publication like that, especially Enquirer, like, you know, they're out there, like they're making statements, they're, you know, really kind of full of like all these young people. After Grey Wolf, DRR, A Long House, we approached writers who know other writers who know other writers. Igonia Barrett approached me about A Long House because I think Kechi Nomu was looking for writers or for people to submit work. And he was like, oh, Kalia writes good work. And yeah, that's kind of how it happens. I find like when you're writing, especially like in a place like Kenya or in a place like, you know, these African countries, maybe somewhere else also is the same thing. People tend to kind of share opportunities with each other and know of each other kind of in a quiet way. You won't know that someone knows you, you know?
You won $12,000, you know, with all that. I mean, how does that feel? Like, because you said you don't normally get paid for your writing, but you got a huge payout for this book. I was surprised.
It was nice to receive money. What do you want me to say? But I know it was paid as an advance. The advance was paid in two parts, in the beginning, and then when I delivered the rest of the work. Because otherwise you won't write the book, you'll just run off with the money, right? Mm-hmm. That's how writing works. I know, it was interesting. It was kind of like a crash course into kind of understanding like how publishing works. So I really had no clue before. Contracts, subsidiary rights, so how the advance is paid, royalties, etc. I'd never had that kind of paperwork or encountered that kind of like legal language and stuff. So yeah, it was interesting. I would keep a Grey Wolf sending me emails, being like, oh, can you sign up on this? Like, oh, what do you think of this? And I'd be like, you know what? I have to actually research this. Oh, can you explain this to me? Because it's new. And then I'd ask my parents or I'd ask like family to help me out. Because it was already an overwhelming experience, you know, winning the prize. But now there's a lot of like paperwork involved. You know, a lot of things you have to consider. So yeah, it was an interesting journey. Yeah, not just about the money, but in learning how publishing houses work, how publishing itself, how a book goes through stages, not just editing, but like, you know, copy editing, covers, subsidiary rights, etc., language, licensing the books in different languages and stuff. I'm still learning as I go. So the money was a part of that, but it wasn't the only thing. Alhamdulillah, I'm really grateful I got paid. So that was really nice.
As I was reading this, I noticed, you know, I felt like I was reading a bit of Yvonne Adyambo Warish style of writing.
Oh, and wow.
You know, it reminded me a bit of Dragonfly Sea. It's so funny. Was there any influence there? Or?
No, because, okay, I love Yvonne Adyambo Warish's work. Dust was very much a big deal to me. Because it was one of the first books I got when I made the personal decision. I'd be like, you know, I hadn't been reading for a while because of school or other things. You know, sometimes you're just distracted. And I said, I need to improve as a writer. I need to be reading, writing from Kenya, from Africa. So Dust was one of the first books, along with like Grace Ogot's short story collection, where I made like a personal buy from my wages. I was already working at that time, so like it was the first time I actually used not my allowance, but like my actual like job money to buy a book. And the first book I did buy was Dust. Our style is very different. I describe Mr. Orr's writing as almost in Dust, at least almost cinematic in pacing, in the way I guess information is introduced. Very unique writing, very engrossing. It's like when you're in the cinema. And you sit down, if you're looking on your phone, you're not going to really be watching the movie. But in that dark room, you bring all that focus to the screen and you're in it. People say that it can be a bit difficult because it's very wordy and dense. I don't know if it's dense. I don't think so. But I think that's part of the writing. you being drawn into that kind of prose, you can't leave it easily once you're in. But coming back to Dragonfly Sea, I was actually asked that, if have you read Dragonfly Sea while I was still doing edits on the book? And I told the person who asked me, I haven't, and it kills me. I want to read it, but I know Yuki Soma is going to color my work. It's set in a completely different part of Coast, set in Pate. But if I read it, I'm going to start thinking differently about my work, and I've already set a kind of like plan for how I'm going to write this book. There were some things I was still developing, some things I was still editing, they're moving around. So I told myself I'd save that for me when I was done with writing this book. Because I did consider getting it, right? And then I opened up the Google search and I was like, okay, Dragonfly Sea, of course, I have to read this book. And I saw the word cat and girl. Obviously, they're completely different books there. I think there's a cat in it also, right?
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Mm. And when I saw that, I was like, obviously, these are different books. Obviously, everything is different. But I cannot read this right now. It's going to influence me. I really love Miss Adore's work, and it's going to have an impact on me subconsciously, consciously, or whatever it is. So,
but
yeah.
The cat in Adore's book is not magical, though.
Yeah, but still. Still, I was like, no. Now this book that I'm writing isn't going to be me anymore. It's going to be like Dragonfly Sea infused. The writing is really that powerful, mashallah, with Miss Aura. It's going to influence me.
So what do you consider to be your writing influences?
I would say most of my influence is actually poetry. And I can't really draw on like actual proper influences, but I was inspired, I guess, in all of my writing by books that show kind of like a kind of humor, kind of absurdity. Maybe books like Catch 22, books like
Joseph Heller.
Hmm?
Joseph Heller.
Yeah, Joseph Heller. Yeah, Catch 22 by Joseph. That's my. I don't believe people should have favorite books, or I don't believe in having a favorite book, but that book is dear to me. But yeah, I've read all sorts of things growing up. But the things I gravitated towards reading after high school was mostly poetry. You have poetry by people like Naira Wahida. You have poetry by people like, I don't know how to pronounce her name. It's Warsan Shira, Wansar Shire.
Warsan
Shire.
Yeah, I know her. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not always good at remembering the names of poets so much as the poetry itself. So I read a lot of Sudanese poets, a lot of Palestinian poets, a lot of Kenyan poets, like Michelle Ngwenyi has really good poetry. Logan February from Nigeria. Those are some of my later like poetry readings. And I gravitate more towards short stories like Nairobi Noir.
I want to ask you about House of Rust and Jahazi Press. What's the story there? How did Jahazi Press get to write locally, and how important was it that you launched your book first year?
Oh, it was so important because it's something I wanted but didn't know how to make happen, because no Kenyan publishing house had approached me. Not that I expected them to, because I remember when I was looking into how to make it as a writer in Kenya, and I was looking around for Kenyan publishing houses, I knew that there were very few publishing houses that actually specialized in like printing fiction or caring very much about fiction or writing for entertainment. So I already knew, but that was 10 years ago or 5 years ago. I really didn't expect much, but I always wanted the book to be available. Yeah. So Jahazi Press actually approached me. Troy Onyango was involved. Troy started working for Jahazi, and I think Troy and Ahmed talked about my book. But somehow they were both involved, and then Ahmed Aydaroos approached me. And then she was like, let me give you a call, let's talk it over. And I was like, okay, so we talked. And then they made the formal offer by approaching Grey Wolf after I told them, like, okay, so let's go ahead. So I was really, really happy about that. I think I would have really regretted if at the end of the day, my book is out there being read by like Americans and Europeans or British people, nothing against them, but not to have the readership here or the work accessible here, I would have felt like I wasn't really changing things the way I said I wanted them to change.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really lucky that Jahazi Press approached for acquiring the rights to publish the book in Kenya and I think in other parts of Africa, inshallah. So it was a big blessing.
You're talking about changing things. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, how is the scene in Mombasa or the coastal region? Or that maybe you want to change it? Or is it? Or what's the story there?
Changing things. I didn't mean me actively changing because I like to live in my little corner under my little rock. But I believe there is a quiet change that someone can kind of mobilize or move forward with just by writing. Because when you write, people read and people's minds open up and people start thinking of things differently. And Mombasa, a literary community in Kenya, tends to be concentrated in Nairobi. Mm-hmm. A lot of the conversations, a lot of the events, a lot of the circles are happening in Nairobi. The writers themselves might not be Nairobian or maybe from all parts of Kenya, but the conversations tend to be happening there. If there's a literary city in Kenya, it's Nairobi. So there are other people, other writers all over Kenya. And we have a lot of Mombasa writers. And I didn't even know they were there until after the Grey Wolf Prize was announced. And then a lot of Mombasa writers actually reached out to me. They were really kind about that. People like Lubna Abdul Halim, Abdulrahman Degwa. So the writers were there, and I didn't know that they were there. But then again, I wasn't someone who actually sought other writers out usually because I was writing quietly in a corner. I didn't want anyone to read my work. Mm. I consider writing a very private thing to me. So we do have the literary community, but it's very small, and it's these writers themselves kind of self-funding, self-organizing, doing all the work themselves. With little to no support. So when I talk about changing, I would like to see the literary community in Mombasa get stronger. Because as much as writers like Fikina Abdulrahman and Lubna try, you'll only be able to really move forward if actual people from Mombasa actually take interest, even though they're not writers themselves. But so here, us writers, we all get excited about each other and we all like, you know, show up for each other. But like, it's like the wider community isn't actually all that interested in the work being done. And I think if they were, you'd see more writers being involved. You'd see more events happening, more workshops and everything. Like Lubna Abdul Halim had a workshop, I think, was it last year? past 2 years or past 3 years. But that was, I think, one of the first writing workshops I'd ever seen that was actually from a coastal person. I know Kwani ran one a few years ago for Swahili writing. It's nice to see those things, but those things can't happen often because, you know, that support is not really there. So I'd like that to change. I'd like people to realize that Mombasa is a place full of many stories. And a lot of people are storytellers. And storytellers don't always have to be writers themselves. Right? Storytellers can be singers, can be gossipers, can be poets, mashairi, can be bloggers, can be really anywhere. There are different formats of telling stories. And I'm hoping that an interest in that develops as we go forward. I don't know if my book will actually do that. Obviously, it's just one book. But I'm hoping people realize that people can write. Because I remember when I was in high school, I wanted to go do writing in uni. I wanted to go study literature. But it was like, okay, what job are you going to do? It needs to become more valuable in the community than just doing like these hard sciences, like becoming a doctor, becoming a lawyer, becoming a businessman, or whatever it is. So this isn't just a problem in Mombasa. It is obviously a problem in Kenya, but I feel it more in Mombasa because obviously I'm in Mombasa and the literary circle here is very small and it's not as covered and not as supported. And I can see like these organizers come up in Lubna and Abdulrahman struggling, doing their best, you know, to Swahili Festival. Lauren Alikiza also did the Heroe Book Festival. and people are realizing that you don't have to be in Nairobi to be a writer. This is no shade to like Nairobi writers. I'm just saying, like, as in people need to realize here in Mombasa that you create like your own spaces here. Like, you now do your own work here. Writers even in Kisumu, writers even in Machakos, so wherever it is.
Thank you for being on the podcast, and I wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you for tuning in. Wherever you may be in the world, please have yourself a great morning, a great afternoon, or a great evening. Kwaheri.